This period of time is a period of Dharma inquiry. I'll take a minute or two to just give a general outline of the time. And it can and does happen, of course, over the days, that from instructions and practices, experiences, teachings, groups, one-to-ones, areas of interest, questions, sharing, concern may arise. So there is an open invitation to anyone who wishes to come and take the good seat here. A microphone is provided, and then some dialogue, some communication gets underway between myself and the person that comes. With the inquiry time, the person may bring a question. She or he, you may wish to share an experience, maybe an area which you'd want to touch upon, and that serves as the basis, as the foundation for the communication. The intention with these inquiry times is to contribute to some insight and understanding or inspiration or fresh ways of exploring or working with things. At any time, the person or myself who is speaking can say thank you, and that's the signal to bring it to a close. And so sometimes people ask me a difficult question, so I say thank you. Let's get to the next person, it'll be easier. So after the thank you, there's a minute or two of just shared silence together, and then after minute or two, I'll extend and make another invitation. So the period is some alternation between some communication, minute or two of silence, invitation, and another may wish to come, and that's how it flows. Equally important as well is for the listeners, and the listening is the fullness of listening, which includes both outer listening, two people looking at sharing, looking at something together, and listening inwardly and really picking up and noticing whatever responses are going on as you listen. And sometimes, of course, there's listening with interest, curiosity, and empathy, and one notices that's in the listening, but also there can be listening with agitation, and listening with reactivity, and listening with boredom, and also to notice that as well. So fullness of listening is both inner and outer. And certainly, I think probably most of us would agree that, my goodness, we all of us have a great deal of practice to do in learning to listen to each other, to listen to the needs of each other, and recognize what each other is communicating. And that's a real practice, and listening is a foundation, it's a meditation, in fact, of itself. So this is the general outline. Sometimes, this is the health warning here, that sometimes, if it's okay with the person, it is recorded. So Tobino records some of them sometimes, and I record, but we will check with you. If it's recorded, then it can go out into cyberspace, and the only comfort is there will not be more than 7 billion listening. There is a ceiling to the number. So that means that if it does is publicly available in the public domain, as we say in English, then the health warning is that your mother might listen to it, or even worse, your therapist. So, and if you prefer it not to be recorded, absolutely fine, we just don't switch on. So this is the time of the inquiry. Of course, one of the three of us, or one of us actually on the last day, will speak about daily life circumstances and much else in that area. So we would like to keep the priority very much to teachings, practices, experiences, concerns, questions of the days that we are actually here together. So anyone who would like to come and take the seat, then you're very welcome. Yes, sir, please come. Yes, sir. With the mic there, yeah. With the recording, yes.
No problem.
Okay. Yes. And yes, we both actually have to remember that good people in the far realms over there need to hear our voices. So you have to get the mic fairly close.
Hi. Can you hear? Over in the back? No? Louder? Okay. The question I have is, actually I've got a couple of questions.
Please, please.
But the first one is about repetitive thoughts and feelings. So I've been practicing daily, at least a year. Mm-hmm. And I do feel a lot of contribution in terms of quality.
Yes.
Right? However, some of the initial motivation that got me into it, like a desire to heal some painful memories, longing, things like that. They still come up pretty often on the practice. And in our group talk, you mentioned that some of the guys talked about like the normal areas where we feel it, the chest, the throat. And you mentioned that with the practice, it's kind of healing, or you get to release those feelings, it's like trapped feelings.
If we could just go a little bit step by step here. The initial response from you was with regard to the repetition of thoughts and feelings.
Yes.
That was the first thing. So let's touch upon that for a moment. Is there much in the days of being here, much in the way of this repetition taking place of the feelings and the thoughts?
It's almost every practice.
Right. Is in the repetition, is it around one particular issue? Is it around memory? Is it around future? Is it around interpersonal? What is it that's repeating itself in feeling and thought?
Events, but they're all related.
Yes.
From the past. Yes.
Right. So you're engaged in the meditations in various postures and mindfulness application through the day, and then when the mindfulness leaves the object of interest, the breath, the body, whatever it might be, there is a tendency then to go back into the past, and then repeat and reconnect with the feelings and the thoughts about events that had taken place.
Yes, either that or just some image comes up and it starts a cycle.
Alright, so it could be past loaded or present, and it is the start for the repetition of the feelings and the thoughts. What, if I may ask, is there a primary kind of feeling that arises in relationship to past or to present image or picture?
Yes.
What's the primary?
Well, it's kind of mixed, but there's grief.
Grief.
And pain and sadness. Yes. Or mixed.
So generally, not always, but generally speaking, with sadness, pain, the mixture and grief, quite often it's associated with separation and loss.
It is.
It is.
I don't want to be specific.
No, you don't have to be. I'm not asking any more than that. So when there is a gap, something or someone is lacking, something is missing.
Yes.
The inner life easily moves into that gap.
Say again?
The inner life, right. The feelings and the thoughts.
Yes.
It's the inner life. It easily moves into the gap, into the loss, into the idea of absence or separation.
The wandering goes there.
Yes, yeah, it wanders into that space.
Yes.
Which is there. And easily that can become the habit. It's habitual.
Well, yes.
It's repetitive.
Yes.
So it's that habit. What is the price that you are paying? What is the cost of the feelings and thoughts repeating themselves, which are going into that which is not there?
It's huge.
Huge in which way?
You mean in my
life?
In my life?
Yeah. In your life. Get the picture. There is, let's say, a loss or a separation or something missing. The tendency is to go to the past. But that past, A, it's gone, of course.
Yeah.
That's one separation. And secondly, that which was, shall we say, is not.
Yeah.
No, no. There. So, in the absence, there's a hole, H-O-L-E, something missing.
Yes.
The repetition of the feeling and the thought is to go into the hole, into something missing.
Well, I have no clue what it's doing. That's what I experienced. Yeah. It goes back there. Obviously.
Exactly. So, when something is going back there, it's going away from something else. If you keep going there, then you're going away from something else.
Yes, my attention is there.
Exactly. What are you going away from?
I don't control that.
No.
Honestly, I do significant effort to move on, but I don't control that.
No. It's not too much about control here. It's a little bit about the relationship to the present, and perhaps where there is something, the present is present, there's something here in the present, which is not generating enough interest or enough love to really bring you into the fullness of the immediate life.
Okay.
So, because it's not, you're going to memory.
So it's like a vacuum.
A vacuum, exactly. So the relationship to the present is a key to having an easy relationship to the past without the repetition of feelings and thought. The relationship to the present. What is a full, rich, interesting relationship to the present.
You asked?
You bet. Of course I'm asking.
So you're suggesting my present is missing out?
Exactly. That's what I'm suggesting.
And you want me to say what is it?
Yes. It's a difficult question.
You want what kind of answer?
Yes. What kind of answer do I want?
No, like abstract.
The answer that I want is the one which is going to make a fundamental difference to your life. That's the only one I'm interested in. You see, so I expanded a bit because there are questions, and you know,
it's fine.
Okay, there's the exit clause. You can say thank you and
Cool.
There is a ideology. I call it ideology because it's an idea, spiritual ideology about being in the moment. It is said, be here and now. There is only the now, the power of now. Here is the now. It's said so often. It is putting people to sleep. It's no longer helpful because it's repeated again and again and again. So a person, she or he or you or me, we may say, oh, I am being in the present moment. It doesn't mean anything. It's just rhetoric.
I hear it all a lot.
If you hear it a lot, do you know how much I have to hear it? And say it as well, which is rather sad. So, when we speak about being in the present moment, it almost hurts to say it there. What does it mean for you?
Well, in the context of what we're talking, it would mean letting go of what I described.
It would be. The letting go, in this case, will come after the discovery of what it means being in the present moment. It will come after. When we were kids, if I may remember, I had a three-wheeler bicycle. Now, my parents had said to me, let go of your three-wheeler bicycle. Never, never. But then for Christmas, I know you don't have Christmas here, but anyway, for Christmas, my parents gave me a two-wheeler bicycle. Man, did I let go of that three-wheeler bicycle. It was easy. Easy. So therefore, if one discovers what it means to be really in the present moment, the letting go of yesterday and yesterday, easy. Therefore, I'm not still asking the question.
So the question about what it is for me to be here now is similar to asking me what was missing in my
life. No, it's not similar.
Oh, it's not the same question?
No, definitely not. What does it mean to be really present?
Well, firstly, I'm inquiring.
All right, yeah, go on.
So, you know, in experience.
Yes, okay. Say right now, keep it right now. Tell me, what does it mean to be present now, here, as you talk?
Well, right now, as we're having this conversation, I feel present.
No. Turn a bit, open your eyes, look around you.
Yes.
Tell us, what is it to be present, though?
In terms of the meditation, sometimes...
No. I'm sorry.
Well, no problem.
Tell me now, what is it to be present?
It's to...
Describe the present. This present.
The present. I'm sitting in front of
Of what?
100 people, maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
And
go on.
I'm thinking about what you're asking me, so I'm there.
All right.
And okay. I have a little bit of tension, but I'm doing okay.
Okay, good to hear, right? Okay, so sitting in front of 100 people, a little bit of tension. Okay, so there's the outer, 100 people, there's some bit of tension.
Yes.
They're doing okay.
Now you're engaged in what you're...
And engaged in what's being said. What else? I'm not looking for a specific answer, I'm just saying, bring it out.
Okay.
Bring it on.
I feel that I trying to walk where you're taking me.
I don't know what I'm trying to do anyway. Well, and not no metaphors. Walking is a metaphor. There's no chance of you and me walking anywhere.
Well,
present. Stay with it.
Okay, we're sitting on this.
All right, go on.
It's red.
All right.
I'm holding a microphone.
Good.
You're dressed in white and black and...
Yeah, that's pretty good, yeah. All right, good spirit. Go ahead.
Yeah, what else?
Exactly.
It's evening, it's nice.
All right.
Not too hot, right. Not too cold.
Exactly.
What?
So, it's not just about being in the blah blah. One could say, this which is revealing itself, in the, of which you gave some really wonderful, positive, helpful reminders, is confirming that what is present, there are infinite number of expressions.
Okay.
Through the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, touch, feelings, thought, perception.
Yes? The senses.
Yeah, through the senses, through the intuitions, through the insight, through the clarity,
this is
through the heart.
This is what's going on.
Exactly. All of this going on, and it's buzzing. Look at it.
All right.
Stay connected with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Can I do the second question?
We'll keep it short for the other good beings who may want to come.
Okay, so I'll give someone else.
Alright, okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Alright, we'll have a quiet minute and then another invitation. Yes, anyone, any time. Yes, sir, come. Hey, can you see? You okay with the microphone?
Yes.
Yeah.
Recording? I'd like to be recorded.
You'd like to be recorded. All right. You will be.
I think I'm the oldest participant here, depending on how old you are.
They can't hear how old
I said, I think I'm the oldest person here of the men, but it depends how old you are.
Question?
Yes. I didn't get a thank you yet. That's good. Here's what I wanted to ask. I've been meditating well over a year, and it's helped me tremendously in terms of getting rid of what I call the futile what-if scenarios. And that's all been very positive. My question that I hear the words, but I can't grasp the bridge to the following. The idea that observing the breath, observing feelings, observing sensations will lead to some insight into oneself. And I hear the words, I don't know what that means. I don't know if it means something more than insight into more bodily feelings, something like that, but I don't know what that means. What kind of insights?
If I may just mirror and reflect the question, because it's a good point here. So there is from us encouragement, of course, to apply mindfulness or awareness or observation there, and in that to take an object out of the great field, and one is the breath, or it might be the body, and as you point out, and it's said that quality of interest and attention and giving of presence to may generate enough calm and clarity for some insight to come through. That insight which comes through may be connected with the event, or, as we were hearing in the groups today, sometimes an insight may come through about something which has no clear, obvious connection with the event itself, which we can touch upon in a moment or two. Naturally enough, I'm a little curious in terms of your meditations here, but firstly, coming back to the what if, because it's very easy to live in what if, with fears and hopes and expectations and notions of success and failure with the what if. What allowed or enabled you to change your relationship to living in what is?
Okay.
What helped that? Because there may be one or two others who noticed the what if arising.
Well, most of my... Can you hear in the back? Okay. I've been living in Israel 20 years, but I worked on Wall Street. And you could all say boo now.
No.
I worked on Wall Street in the markets, and one of the very positive things about worrying about every possible calamity that could happen is it could make you a very profitable and effective trader. However, the cost, once that became ingrained, the cost of that is very high. And if you'll say, what is the cost, in what way? You go on a trip, you're worrying, will it rain, won't it rain? Will the grandchildren get there, won't they get there? The quality of my life, the cost of that quality of what ifs, the negatives, outweighed the profitability, and for that matter, the money I was making. And I rationally tried to tell myself this is not worth it, and it was not until starting a meditative practice that I was actually able to be somewhat successful.
That's good. So
you told me to say all that.
No, it's clear. In the using memory here, putting the mindfulness there, in the engagement in the meditation practice, prior there was a recognition that the what if, shall we say, was not giving peace of mind, no matter how much money was being made or could be made, nevertheless, still the what-ifs were still arising, and of course it often will carry anxiety, fear, lots of speculative views in the mind. Then something inside said, this has to change, as you pointed out, and then you took an interest in meditation there. I'm curious, was there a moment in the meditation processes in which you knew you were out of the bubble of what ifs, or was it just that there was a fading away of getting caught up in the what ifs? Okay. So in other words, was it British language for a moment, was it gradual or sudden?
Right. It was not binary. It wasn't binary, but it wasn't extremely gradual either.
Yeah.
And I think the point of recognition came when there was a clear differentiation between what I was feeling physically, which I felt was real, and all of these scenarios, where even if one happened, the other 99 would never. And that seemed to be ephemeral and literally not real. And then the body, whatever, whether breath, sensations, the more I felt that, the more the other faded away. But it all was right. A bit of a tipping point.
Yeah, okay, I get you. Clear picture. So sometimes the movement of the attention onto the immediate, as you were discussing with the good gentleman before, that movement of the attention gives a certain grounding there, and then one can experience the change which is taking place, because the habit and the repetitive habit of keep going into the world of what is, into the world of numbers, financial, etc., the interest in that begins to fade away there. Coming back to the good question, with the change and the shift that's over, what then currently would be or might be a motivation or one of the motivations for being here in this retreat, since it's not a what if? So what's the current area of interest for you?
Well, this is my first retreat.
Yes.
And all my meditation to now has been self-taught, which means wrong. It's been probably from 30 or 40 hours of tapes and Insight, Spirit Rock, etc., etc., a few of you, as a matter of fact. And it was really to improve and, I'd say, to get to the next level of calm. I'd say the next level of calm and peace being with myself.
All right.
And away from the 8 grandchildren. No, peace being with myself.
All right. Yeah. So, the sense of the movement, precious, towards the calm and being at peace with oneself, that itself is an insight. It is to see clearly that there is a process which could very well be helpful for this, which you're calling meditation, which you're calling a retreat. So when I see something clearly, I can move to the next level of developing more calm and insight. There is a process and a practice, as we are all doing here, and then there is the engagement that takes place. So sometimes the insight leads to the experience, and the experience can contribute to the insight. Any moment or moments here which have been especially valuable with regard to the interest in deep calm and deep peace? Well, any moments that you like?
Yes, I would say since this is the most sequential and consecutive.
Yes.
That quantitatively I've done the practice. I had periods, fleeting, but I would put him in the 15 to 30 seconds
yes,
of a level of calm. That was funny?
No.
A level of calm, of being without any outside stimulation.
All right.
Let's put it like that.
Okay.
And that's something I want to repeat. But yeah. Not in a clinging way.
No.
I heard the Hebrew also.
You listen to the talk. In the small event, 15 to 30 seconds or whatever, the world around, in terms of its immediacy and presence, because it's not a pull, it isn't imposing itself. I mean, it still can impose itself, even without our wish or interest. But sometimes the world isn't imposing itself around. We're not imposing ourselves on it either. So there isn't that collision that taking place. And without that pressure from within or from without, consciousness has only one place left to go, and that is deep. If it's not pulled out that way, and we're not pushing it out that way, then the resting cannot give the opportunity for it to go deeper. Is it important? Is your sense, your intuition, important that insights do keep emerging? Or is it a matter of trust that something from the deep will come through? What's your relationship to this area of insight?
I say that although I've been retired a long time,
yes,
I have a selfishness to want to continue to experience new things and good things.
Okay, so with the views thick and fast here. Does the interest in the wish to experience new things confirm selfishness?
The things I want to experience,
yes,
that now I have a chance, right, are not the things in the past, right, the vacations, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say anything I want, I made a transition over a number of years of being able to be alone, meaning being able not to have to be entertained.
Yes.
And I'd like the next level of that. That's what,
right,
I'm going for.
All right. Okay. When I hear that, both the wish to explore the new,
mm-hmm,
the lack of need to be entertained, plenty to entertain, but not that need, I must find, yes, the appreciation of, and the development of appreciation of aloneness, and to be with one, with oneself, that kind of view, to me, is an unselfish view, and it's a view which shows some wisdom and clarity and interest. I don't hear anything selfish about it.
I was going to say thank you, but then you'll throw me off.
No. I can say thank you, and I still throw you off. Anything else to add?
No, I just want to thank you. Seriously, I think this talk was worth coming here.
All right.
And I think I'm leaving tonight. No.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'll give a short reflection on these exchanges afterwards. By the way, I'm 71. How old are you?
70 and a half.
All right. Who will ever 5 minutes and then one more from the other gender. Yes, anywhere, anytime. Yes, please come. With the recording?
No.
Yes. The inner life has its movements, and as we listen to initially, the movement of the inner life can have a habit, a pattern, a tendency to go to the past. The movement itself may carry, as we heard, some feelings. Those feelings could be of sadness, could be of loss, of separation, of disappointment, or absence, and much, much else. And we can find ourselves keep going to the past, as we sometimes say, living in the past. And though we may pull or drag or wish to be away from the past, we come back to the present. But quite often the present moment is only fleeting because there's not enough passion or mindfulness or curiosity or interest in the living present. It's not touching us strongly and deeply. So the pattern seems to be therefore more strong than what's available in the immediate. So that we drift back. So therefore I was saying, as it were, if we can get beyond the rhetoric, the language of be here and now, actually employ in a very healthy way our senses, we may be able to experience much more, we will, the immediacy of things, and really notice much, much more about what is immediately taking place in our life. And that connection with that will naturally include the connection with ourselves as well. And so that there is a recognition of the dynamic of life. We as human beings are fully engaged in this dynamic. And it's not a theory, because our experience and our interest and our love and our happiness and our connection keeps confirming it. And in a genuine way, our experience really begins to inform us, well, I feel really close with what the reality is about. And that, from a spiritual standpoint, is especially important. are there. So our eyes and our ears, nose, tongue and touch are the small but remarkable instruments, each one of them significantly different from the other, which actually keeps revealing different aspects of this which we're living with. And part of our purpose is to recognize that, and if we're really connected with life deeply, there is a kind of deep sense, in a way, that nothing really repeats itself. It isn't surprising we get rather dissatisfied when we're constantly repeating the same thoughts and the same feelings. There's something in the deep of the being which says, this is unsatisfactory. And part of the reason it's unsatisfactory, because we know there's something false and unnecessary about it. It's not the truth. So we keep going over with thought and feeling again and again, and we get dissatisfied. But this satisfaction informs. This is not healthy, it's not useful, it's not true. It's a deception. Knowing of that quite often does mean practice. So, yeah. In coming back to keeping with the thought and the other themes for a moment, in a very simple way, if the thought is unhealthy, that means it's covered or tainted or stained with greed and negativity, with fears and anxieties, and the thought and problematic mind states really caught up together. It isn't easy to be as clear as possible. This is what is being experienced now. This is what is arising now, and what arises is going to pass. And if we're not getting enough clarity, if it's too close, the difficult thoughts and states of mind like that, palm of the hand to the eyes there, and sometimes a good counsel with the other helps to give some perspective. The communication with life and the connection with life, the deep connection with life, reduces dramatically the amount of thought. Period. Thought's valuable, it's necessary, it's precious, it's not to be rubbished. We are not trying to get beyond thought, it's not part of the process, but it's got to find its proper perspective in the scheme of things. We have made the mistake of exaggerating thought, and it's robbing us of happiness, reality, and connection with life. In the relationship, and others have had since I've been here, and of course elsewhere, keeping in touch and in tune with ourselves, it may be that the initial interest and motives for being here may have, and it's completely appropriate, a single priority. A single priority might be, gosh, my life has been spent, or too much of my life, in the world of what if, and the hotbed of that neurosis is called Wall Street. And numbers. And the what-ifs with all the speculation there. I remember here some years ago, might be of interest to you, one of the senior bankers in Israel for a large bank, he and I had a public dialogue together in the city. And the background to it was, he was a successful banker and on the board of one of the major banks here, And then he sat a meditation retreat, and some important insights came to him about ethics in banking, which for most of us is pretty obvious, but anyway, apparently it's not so obvious to those in the middle of it. And he realized something needed to be changed there. The outcome of that was he began to bring up the sensitive issue of ethics. How can one dare do such a thing? One of the outcomes of that, he was telling me that his team, that means some of the people on the board of the directors, were there, did not want to talk to him. He began to get excluded because he wanted to bring in some fresh values which showed respect for the banking world, respect for the customers, and respect for themselves. And that wasn't what the board was interested in, and he resigned. And he was a really lovely and some of you may hear a precious man. And sometimes those situations arise, I use it as a small example, where we're just meditating and an issue completely unrelated to the event, that something in the deep, this is the Buddha's word here, something in the deep moves through, and it's got authority to it, and it's got power to it, and it's got concern to it, and the voice then carries into the world. And that relationship of the deep to action is a really precious kind of relationship. It can happen, as the good person said. There's a situation of coming to retreat, there is an important resolution of an issue, the what-if issue. And one sees and feels and knows, as he was explaining to us very beautifully, the benefit of it. And so the inner life says, well, there's some trust here that through my experience, through listening, through the culture that we create together, perhaps some fresh areas can come. And I'm interested, as we should be, in real deep inner peace. I'm interested in calmness. I'm interested in the love of aloneness and the love of togetherness. And perhaps we can work and explore that and really know and feel that, and perhaps the retreat can make a contribution. And it's these kind of things of insights related to the event and not related to the event. You know, just to finish here, friend of mine, very good friend, she went on a retreat, and she said to me that 30 years before, she had a big argument with her brother. You probably never have any arguments here in Israel, but anyway, we haven't said a big argument. Do you know the first thing that was ever said to me when I landed in Israel? First time I came, Stephen called the invitation. And in the first conversation, I don't think it was Stephen, first conversation it was, Christopher, welcome to Israel. Two Israelis, three arguments. And the first thing I never forgot. I won't say if it's true, but I never forgot. All right. And she had a big argument with the brother. They did not speak to each other once in 30 years. Not a word. They just cut off. Unexpectedly, she hadn't even thought about him for years. She just thought, just didn't think about him. And unexpectedly for her, the brother arose in the meditation. And she said to me, I have to do something. Something I have to do. This is my brother. The parents had died, long died. And she knew where he was, married to kids. She wrote some cards, she sent some messages, you know, about once a month or so, not a word. No interest, of course,
being married and two kids, so one nephew and niece, boy and the girl. And then at Christmas, you card, just a postcard, thanks for your message, thanks for your cards, and then nothing again. Quietly, without getting angry, upset, quietly. Then a little longer message came. Now they're seeing each other every few weeks. She found her nephew and niece. She goes there for holidays. They've become really good friends because one person, quietly, lovingly, and gently, just made the reconnection. And as she said, it just came unexpectedly in a meditation. That's what we're here for. Thank you for listening.